Merry Christmas!
Willow hasn't believed since she was six.
How'd she take it?
No, she found out. She just told herself.
Oh, she just
we were in the car, and she said, she's like, hey, it's like that the Easter Bunny doesn't exist, right? And I was like, what do you think? And she's like, well, that would be really insane because there's no such thing as a big Easter Bunny, especially one that can carry a basket. And I said, wow. Yeah, I was like, it's just a story, and it was really quiet. And then she goes, huh. Well, I guess Santa doesn't exist either. And I was like, what should make you say that? She's like, well, that would be silly as well. But wow, I'm guessing. Man. And then she just says, "Is the cutest thing. She just said, well, thanks for all the presents.
Oh, that is awesome, dude.
Something's
welcome everyone to the Screamcast, episode 40. We're getting up there in age, starting to bald, and finding weird hair in places. I'm your host, Sean DeRigger. With me, Brad Henderson.
Dude, I've been balding since I was like 8.
And Brian Sauer is back.
Hello. Yeah, also bald, by the way.
Okay. Well, shit, that doesn't work, does it?
Yeah, you're the only one with like a big head of hair, Sean.
I'm the asshole. I'm
yeah, okay. Finally, you took that crown from me. You can have it.
Well, today we're keeping it simple. We are discussing one flick. We are discussing the one that started the Santa killer craze. I think this was the one that started it all. Didn't start the Christmas horror movies, but the Santa Claus. To all a good night.
Don't I disagree with that statement?
You do. Okay. Directed by David Hess. Well, then Jennifer Runyon is wrong. I just took that from her interview. So I did not do any fact check whatsoever on her claim.
That's why she quit acting. Word got out she was a liar. But see, the thing is everybody agreed with her because of that scene in Ghostbusters whenever they're showing the cards and she's saying, hey, it's this. And right. Bill Murray's like, oh, yeah, that's correct.
Oh, yeah,
see?
That's the
they
kind
got her
of
a big head. Yeah, and no one since then has told her she's wrong. And well, then she just stopped acting because everybody – I think the truth came out when she was in Kronosaur and everybody was like, no, this movie sucks.
Well Kronosaur? Carnosaur.
Carnosaur. Sorry. Oh, my God.
The great Carnosaur trilogy.
Give me a break.
Kronosaur sounds like a good movie. Like I just assumed that was a real thing, like a time-traveling dinosaur or something. I don't know. Brad, I think you got something there. Seriously.
Have you never seen those movies?
Carnosaur?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no. Carnosaur rules. I've seen the first one, but not the trilogy.
I own all three on DVD, and they're out of print.
Oh, yeah, you got some money there.
I hold on to these with my life. They're trash, but they're fantastic. Anyway, Brad, do we have some Blu-ray announcements and possibly some VOD announcements?
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
We got a couple things on Twitter, and I got a message and stuff about possibly doing that. So I'm not going to run. If I ran through everything, you would be here all day.
I think this would be, Blu-ray announcements. Same thing. We're just adding in a few shout-outs to some VODs out right now.
Yep. Actually just won this time because we did a couple last time.
Cool.
But as far as new releases, I got a couple DVDs on here because I think they need to be announced. On January 6th, Image is releasing The Houses That October Built. It's a found footage about a group of people that are trying to find the scariest haunted house, for Halloween. And they get stuck in a bind with a bunch of fucking crazy people. It's actually pretty decent, and it's on VOD, as is right now, but it's also coming out on DVD on January 6th, so I suggest picking that up. It's unique, and also the filmmakers did a documentary a few years ago, kind of the same thing, and that's how they got the idea. They were like, well, let's just make a movie as well. Let's go back to all these places and, you know, do a movie, and it actually turned out to be pretty decent. So yeah, check that out. Demon Queen Massacre Video is releasing on DVD. If anybody knows anything about Demon Queen, it's a hard find to find VHS for a long, long time. Massacre Video is going through a bunch of old films and releasing them on DVD. I know they did. I think Massacre Video did Black Devil Doll from Hell.
Quiet Zone.
And they did do those, right? The duo?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just making sure. I couldn't remember if it was Massacre Video or not. But yeah, they brought those to life, which those two, another two that were extremely rare on VHS, those got a DVD release like last year or this year or something like that. Warner Brothers is releasing Annabelle on January 20th, the Conjuring spinoff. And also on January 20th, Thanksgiving 1 and 3 come out on DVD, finally. Because I think those have just been on Netflix and VOD for the longest time.
Are those worth – I was meaning to check those out this year, but I didn't get to it. They're worth it?
The first Thanksgiving movie is like 45 minutes. It's not very long. and then 3 is feature length, and it's just as fun.
Yeah,
like it's just a bunch of one-liners, and the reason why there's 1 and 3 people is because 2 doesn't exist. 2 exists within 3 because they're on the hunt for Thanksgiving 2 because it controls the end of the world or something like that.
Wow, Jesus.
February 3rd, Demon's Rook, which is also on VOD right now, comes out on DVD on February 3rd. The reason I mention this is because this movie inspired me completely. And a lot of people, the guy who, wrote, directed, acted, I think he filmed this movie over for 3 years and, because he got it weekends, got his friends together and just did it. The special effects, and Sean, you would love it. The practical effects are absolutely amazing. There's plenty of monsters, plenty of creatures, and it's just fantastic. Like it looks great. It is very, very low budget. I mean, he basically had like $10 to do this movie. And he's a very special, he's a great special effects guy. And he had a couple friends that come in and did all these monsters. But yeah, they wrote a couple articles about them leading up to this movie, like how they did it and what they did. And basically they were just like said, if this you want to make a movie, just fuck everything, drop it, and just do it. Even if you have nothing, because it's going to be a lot easier to make your next one. I don't know. It's pretty inspiring. Not that you want to drop out of school or anything, or you know, leave your family. But it's definitely a decent movie. And the filmmakers gained a little notoriety this year because they had a short film called Goat Witch that came out, and Goat Witch is really good too. Great special effects as well. February 10th, Cult Epics. I know we mentioned Necromantics 2, or Nico mentioned Necromantics 2. Well, that is actually getting released on February 10th. VHS Viral, belch, comes out on February 17th. I cannot recommend that at all. March 3rd, Blackula, even though Blackula was announced, it's got a release date of March 3rd. Sci-fi bullshit movie from Scream. Oh, that Blackula's from Scream, of course. Dark Hall and Dog Soldiers finally got a release, or Dog Soldiers finally got a release date on March 10th. And Adam Green's Digging Up the Morrow is getting released on March 24th by Image. That's a movie that's been made for a couple years. I guess they've been having trouble finding distro because the plot of it sounds really cool, but apparently the movie blows, which it's kind of sad, I guess, because I was really looking forward to it.
Me too. That sounded like a cool one.
Yeah, no, it sounds really, really good. It sounds like a great monster flick, and you know, the people behind it are decent filmmakers. So,
well, maybe kind adjust of your expectations and see if there's anything good worth squeezing out of it.
Yeah, I'm
Adam Green, so
I'm hoping so. Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Hatchet movies, though. So that's the thing.
Those are hit or miss for me.
Yeah, I love his Holliston TV show with Joe Lynch. I think that was an incredible TV show, very, very funny. And I liked Spiral that he did.
Yeah,
and what was the other thing he did?
Frozen.
Yeah, yeah, Frozen. I like Frozen quite a bit.
I love
too.
What he did with the little snowman in that. Incredible.
Very
the songs. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he wrote all them himself.
You can go and search horror on VOD. There's plenty. I'm not even coming close. I'm just basically going to pick out things that I've seen or I know about that's supposed to be good or, you know, that I've been getting buzzed. The only thing I have right now is the Babadook. I saw the Babadook at Fantastic Fest this year, and I thought it was fantastic. It's very eerie, very creepy. It's getting a lot of buzz, mainly because, you know, I don't listen to the critics. I'm a critic myself. Of course, we have this podcast, but like, just go and watch it. Don't listen about how great it is or how creepy. Just go in watching a fantasy childhood horror film. That's all you need to do. But don't listen to what William Friedkin says.
What the creator of Exorcist says is the scariest movie of all time ever.
He also he introduced a screening, I guess, last night in L.A., he's really into it.
No, I'm super, super stoked that he liked it, and it does wonders for the movie to have a filmmaker such as that praise, which is great. But just take his thing, just like, well, I'm going to say it right now. The Babadook is good, and it's scary. That's it. Just go in. Don't go in thinking it's the scariest movie of all time. Don't go in thinking it's the best horror film of all time. It's a movie, and it's really good. Don't build it up. Don't let anybody build it up for you.
Yeah, because that's a lot.
When you do that, like, your expectations can be, you know, after you watch the movie, you can be overwhelmed, underwhelmed, whatever. Just go in a movie. Just word of mouth. Oh, this is supposed to be good. I'm going to go see it. And then just shut everything off. Because the Babadook is getting so much praise, and I love that it's getting a lot of praise, and it's going to probably do really well when it's on, you know, Blu-ray on Netflix in the theaters, everything like that, VOD, great. But just go watch the movie. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Boom. All right.
Do we want to talk about any Scream Factory announcements?
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up.
I can't wait until Cruel Jaws comes out.
Oh man, so let me set this up. So we had on Monday of last week, Scream Factory announced that they would be releasing Exterminators from the Year 3000 as a double feature with Cruel Jaws. The Italian Jaws ripoff. And there was much rejoicing. The internet blew its load. Everyone was excited. Everyone who knows anything about Cruel Jaws was excited. And was it 2 days later? Was it 2 days or 1 day, fellas? They announced
2 days. Yeah, two days
later.
No, they didn't announce it. They just announcement.
They pulled their announcement of Cruel Jaws.
No, they made an announcement on their Facebook, I think.
No, pulled it first. Yeah.
They pulled it.
You're right.
And they hope no one would notice or something. Or they're probably just getting their statement together, but they pulled it. And of course, you know, people religiously check this stuff. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden somebody noticed on Facebook, one of the Facebook groups noticed that it was missing. And I started to inquire what was going on. And then it turned out, you know, that evening they finally make an announcement that due to the rights issues or whatever, because it's, you know, it's straight up Jack's footage from Jaws 1, 2, and 3, that they would not be releasing it due to, you know, kind of the possibility of legal issues, which has been the issue with this movie getting released, you know, from the start. But I just thought it was weird that they pulled the announcement and didn't say anything, and they thought they were just going to get away with it, or you know what I mean, or just.
I don't think they were going to. I don't think that necessarily they thought they were going to get away with it.
I worded that wrong.
They yanked it, and then they, you know, they should have. Number one, first and foremost, like I don't and I'm not meaning to sound like I'm. Let me preface this by saying I'm not trying to be an asshole or a jerk or an elitist or anything, but whenever you release a movie as a company, maybe someone in that company should watch the movie first.
That's not being an asshole. Because, that's running a business.
Not everybody can see every horror film. I haven't seen every horror film. But if you're going to release something, you might want to pop it in the DVD player or something and watch the movie, because their statement basically solidified that they have not seen Cruel Jaws, because their statement was, our fans told us that it contains footage from Jaws 1 and 3, and there's other shark movies as well. 75% of the movie is other movies. 25% is stuff that, you know, Bruno Mattei made for this movie to create, and it's known as Jaws 5 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd think that someone watched a fucking movie, but no one did. And it seems like, oh, wait, this movie contains this? This is what our fans are saying. Let's go check it out. So you're going to acquire something, which is fine, but you should have watched it before you announced it.
Or at least done some research on it.
Yeah, I mean, you could just watch the trailer. I think even Brian Sauer said that.
Yeah, somebody on Facebook.
I don't know why I said
Twitter.
Your last name, but fine.
Somebody on Facebook or Twitter said that, you know, you could tell from the trailer if you look that the footage is there. I didn't double check that, but and I also get that, you know, you see, you know, they probably deal with like lists of movies and they're kind of like, you know, large groups, and you go, oh yeah, that sounds good or whatever, and that's one thing. But then again, another to set up an announcement of it, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like once you're getting ready to announce, maybe, I don't know.
You'd think. Smaller companies have done this. I mean, we had this with the last shark?
Yeah.
Where Brad sends us a text, hey, you guys got to get this movie, you know, and pre-order this movie. It's going up right now. It's limited to, what, like?
It was like 500 or 500, something.
500, so we all jumped on it. We all ordered it, and then later on that evening or whatever, we get an email saying that the Blu-ray's been canceled. You know, but that's a small company. And
well, they were doing DVD though.
Still doing the DVD. They had Blu-ray rights. Yeah,
yeah, some Blu-ray digital thing or
weird
something
distribution like shit. But I don't think I've ever seen an announcement go like this, be so like warmly received. Like, it was blogged all over the place. People were ecstatic about it. And then 2 days later, just have it just vanish. You know, I've never seen that. I mean, I would expect that maybe from Code Red possibly, but I don't think I've ever seen it happen from a company like this. I don't know. I mean, companies make mistakes. I mean, they responded to our Facebook post and everything, which is fine. But that, all we're saying is just, I mean, I dealt with, you know,
I find it more funny than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I know ridiculous. Mistakes happen, shit happens, you know, it was just a, you know, silly little mistake.
Right.
But damn, that's funny. I laughed. I was like, first I was like, what the hell's going on? And then I just laughed.
Yeah, so. it's not something to rake Scream Factory through the coals and to like fuck the company. It's nothing like that. It's just, you know, it's like, I hope that they've saw this and were like, man, we better, you know, get our shit together, you know, or whoever is in charge of that stuff better step it up. But
yeah,
I don't know. It just, you know, we love Scream Factory. We have an idea of what we would, you know, I think what we'd like them to be, but we're starting to realize, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah,
you know. Moving along. I'll save you for that one.
Focus on the collector's editions, then everything else, people, you know.
Well, except for Terminator Year 3000, that's a kick-ass movie.
Dude, that's day one, man. I'm getting that one. But, so. When I started this, I was like, I'm going to collect every single Scream Factory movie, and then just seeing their announcements, you know, there's, you know, just tons of stuff. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not going to collect every Scream Factory movie now. I did that for a year.
Just
and
the
I think
vinegar
I'm
syndrome.
No, man, I'm going to collect all the Kino movies, Kino Lorber. So that's my next, 2015 thing.
Thankfully, they're scaling back.
Well, guys, I wanted to start talk about Kino, because they're an interesting company, because they do kind of co-licensing deals. You know, they've done it with, didn't they do it with Redemption Films? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, the Redemption titles, yes.
Redemption's all about, like, lesbians, right? That's all lesbian horror movies.
Jesus, well, dude, okay, number one, you're drunk. Let's just stop. All right, Redemption titles are old, like, Italian, like,
lesbian
trash
movies.
Cinema, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Lesbians
You know, they did some, you know, they released some Jess Franco films. I don't know. It's kind of like the nitty gritty, like Italian sleaze fest.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff with vampires that have to deal with women who may be lesbians.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, they have plenty. I mean, it's like softcore Italian porn is like a lot of that stuff.
And it's all on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, all the Redemption titles.
But I don't know if Redemption titles are coming out as much.
No.
Because they released some Giallo films too. I know they like did Cold Hands of Fear and you know, stuff like that. So yeah. I don't know. Those are pretty decent. Those were all numbered too, I heard. Huh. So if you're going to collect them, you need all those numbers.
You have to. So To All a Good Night was I think it was one of the first when they partnered with Scorpion Releasing, because Scorpion Releasing did a deal with Kino, and that's.
Well, the Scorpion title has been released for a little
bit. Yeah, but when did they start? When did they partner up with Kino? Is it a year to 2 years? It's pretty
like
recent.
This year. Yeah, I don't know what their first title was, but this is one of the ones that Scorpion, I believe, Scorpion had with their partnership with MGM and put this out. So.
Yeah, and then Kino also does their Studio Classics. Which, you know, there's some people that are all, because they have the black spine, all the same lettering, and people are going crazy about collecting those ones. I actually just watched Emerald Forest last night.
So, yeah, they're all over the place right now. So
yeah, I wanted to see, what do you guys think of Kina Lorber?
That's Brian's apartment. He's probably masturbating right now.
I think they're great. I think they're having a great year. I think they between the Studio Classics and the hookup with Scorpion. You know, they, and then their own, like, you know, classic lit, and then Raro too. I mean, like, they're just all around cranking out some crazy, crazy good stuff and tons of stuff this year. I mean, in all genres, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Same here.
They've been around for a while, right? I mean,
early 2000s, as far as I know, probably even longer than that. Because I remember they used to release like Mike films and weird Japanese movies, and you know, because I even have some of those back in the day that say Kino Video on the side.
Oh yeah,
they've been around for a while. They know the ins and outs, and they're a company to trust. And even with their DVDs and Blu-rays, they do pretty decent work. I mean, I haven't seen anything where I would consider it trash or garbage. But
yeah, they seem to be a company that they're interested in just kind of putting out the film. They don't do a whole lot of bells and whistles on their releases. I think the Quartermass Experiment is the first one that really has. I heard someone saying this was the first one that really has a bunch of good extras.
Yeah, that one's stacked.
And but as far as their other stuff, it's pretty, you know, pretty sparse. But I think like the titles they're releasing are just fantastic. I mean, I went through and I marked all the Studio Classics on my wish list at Amazon, and a lot of early Sean Connery stuff. Stuff like, you know, like Meteor. They just released The Package with Gene Hackman.
The Offense. We're talking Sean Connery.
And another Sean Connery. Yeah, I mean, it's
Avenging Force. Michael Dudikoff.
Oh, dude,
Michael Dudikoff.
I can't wait for that one, man.
That is exciting.
So yeah, they're all over the place, but they seem
Boggs and Hicks too recently. Yeah.
I feel like they're not just putting out crap. Like they're not just gathering.
No, they're all over. They're very diverse, and you know, they I imagine they do choose wisely, but they are obviously like a little bit of like Criterion. They're film lovers. They like everything, and whatever they can get their hands on that's worthy, or you know, anything that can actually have maybe kind of a small cult following their given life to, which is nice, because I mean, who else the fuck is going to release Avenging Force?
Yeah.
You know? I know, man.
They got the River's Edge coming in January too, which is a really cool. I mean, it's not a horror movie, but it's a pretty great cult movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other horror titles have they released other than To All a Good Night? Do you guys know off the top of your head?
Are we talking Scorpion or just Kino?
Just, well, with the Scorpion and Kino, I don't, because I think, what's Scorpion's involvement? Do they have the rights?
I believe Scorpion had the rights. They went with Kino to have maybe better distribution, and you know, they needed help. I mean, because they were just a small little company. They needed some help. I believe that's what it is. I mean, it's Code Red's Bill Olson's brother who owns. So funny. But yeah, it's I think it was like eight films, I want to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up right now.
No, because I think it was Grizzly was one of them. I think they did Sorceress.
Yeah.
Green Ice.
Yeah, the Green Ice,
which looks amazing. Oh my gosh, guys! Green Ice, is that something I should check out?
It's okay.
The poster is incredible.
Poster's better than the movie.
Damn it.
It's pretty good.
So I know that was like their very first batch, I think. Yeah. And now we're going into kind of other one, maybe things that they acquired together.
Right.
Because now they're doing a MGM stuff. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it. I just know that they're working together.
Yeah. Well, it's a great partnership. And I'm happy for Scorpion Releasing that they have this kind of partnership. And it's, you know, Scorpion, I think, has always been, it's funny because just looking at Scorpion and Code Red, I would almost describe like Code Red as like, you know, the long lost bastard brother, you know, of Scorpion, you know what I mean?
It is.
And it turns out they are brothers, running it. And one brother seems to have,
twin brothers.
Holy shit.
I think twin. Dude, that's crazy.
One brother
seems. They're twins and they live together.
Yeah. One brother's. It's
and
this,
they have competing
is this,
companies.
Is this like the.
I still don't get how that works.
They're the Olsen twins. Their names are literally Olsen. They're the Olsen twins.
One seems to have a better business
joke.
Sense.
My buddy Josh Johnson gave that joke.
What I'm saying is one seems to have a better business sense than the other, or better partners, or has just trust people. I don't know. It boggles my mind because Code Red has the titles. You know what I mean? They have the titles, and if they had the right business partner, they would do well. Scorpion, they do some stuff on their own, but the partnership with Kino, I think, is helping them stay afloat. And everything like that. So it's really odd seeing these two companies. And Scorpions, you know, they're doing stuff they've released themselves, like Mortuary and what other ones did they recently release?
Island Claws, Girly. Yeah, right. What was that last one, Brad? Island Claws, Girly.
Mortuary. Can't remember.
Don't Answer the Phone.
Yes. And then the Dirt Bike Kid after that.
Dirt Bike Kid.
Which I just thought was hilarious.
Dirt Bike Kid. Oh, yeah. Great. So I think our we're fans of these companies.
I look forward to, as much as, you know, Code Red, we have some issues with how it's run. I do look forward to everything they announce and certainly everything Scorpion announces. Yeah. I'm always excited, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and just one of them is easier to get than the other.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's dive in, gentlemen, now that we've got that out of the way, and talk about 1980s To All a Good Night.
What happened?
He's dead.
Who's dead?
God, he's dead.
What happened?
DJ! Oh, my God, we're going to die. We're all going to die.
Pull yourself together.
So, Brad, you were saying that this is not the first.
I wouldn't
Santa
consider
killer.
It the. I wouldn't consider it.
Would it be the first full movie? Because I think you're referring to Tales from the Crypt, 1974. Has
1972. No big deal.
1972. Okay.
They had a segment in there and All Through the House, which later became the first episode of when they redid Tales from the Crypt in the late 80s.
Yeah, back in 89.
It was the first episode. But yeah, I would consider that. I mean, it's a woman that's being hunted by a stalked or killer Santa. Being stalked by a killer Santa. I mean, I would say that would be the first one. I mean, yeah, the first feature is probably definitely To All a Good Night. I mean, Christmas Evil came out that same year. I don't know which one came first.
Right.
But, I mean, it's not an original idea at all. You know, it's you know, as far as I know, the Tales from the Crypt, and that was a pretty popular movie in its time. So
just came out on Blu-ray, and hopefully we'll talk about it soon. FYI.
Yeah. So, yeah, and David Hess, who was, there's a big story behind David Hess. He's one of my favorite people, and we could talk about him. But, yeah, he directed it, and he didn't write it, I don't think. But, yeah.
Written by Alex Rebar.
Yeah, he did a, I think he did a bang-up job on it. I mean, people say To All a Good Night's a very, very cliche slasher.
Yes. Well,
yeah, but look what year it came out. It came out in the 80s.
Exactly.
How many slashers existed before then?
Yeah,
like, you know,
totally.
We had Black Christmas, Halloween. You know, we just had a handful. I mean, we didn't have a ton.
Yeah.
So I think this maybe started some of the cliches. I mean, yeah, David Hess didn't really know how to direct a movie, it seems. Like, he was, you know, he did this very quick, it seems. Like, you know, want to get it out in the theaters because that's what everybody was doing. I mean, at this point in time, we had a slew of, you know, probably 10 or 15 slasher films every year.
Yeah.
From the, you know, 78 to, like, you know, probably 88. Yeah, I know they started dying down late 80s. But, you know, I think that he rushed this, obviously. He wasn't a filmmaker. I mean, this is one film that he ever directed. You know? Yeah. I just think he had a tough time. You could tell that by watching the movie. I mean, the cinematography is not too good. It's very, you know, a movie scene. You know, it's just let's film this, and then we're done.
Yeah.
You know, you could see that. But aside from that, I think it's a fun slasher. It's, you know, it's David Hess, so I kind of enjoy it more knowing that he was behind it because, you know, he's such a, like, a, in the real life, he's known as such a super nice guy and very kind, but every role that he took on in a movie, he played a psycho, and he played a damn good psycho, you know, and people who don't know who David Hess is, maybe that are listening, he's, you know, Krug from Last House on the Left. Mm-hmm. He played in Deodato's Body Count. You know, he's known for
Hitchhike.
Yeah, Hitchhike. I know I'm missing some other
one
ones.
One of those actors where you see his face and you're like, that guy. He's been in a lot of TV, 80s TV and things like that. I mean, I'm looking at his face. I'm like, I don't know where I've seen him. But then I'm looking down here and he did, like, you know.
He was also in the house at the edge of the park. He was the villain in Swamp Thing. You know, he's done a lot of horror films, and he always plays, you know, a bad guy for the pretty much. But he also was, you know, a singer songwriter. He wrote songs for Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
You know, he did the sound, a lot of songs for Eli Roth's Cabin Fever. He did songs for Last House on the Left. I mean, he's had some, like, top 10 hits. He went under the name he didn't go under David Hess when he was writing songs. He went under something else. It was David, but I can't remember the last name. But David Hill. But he wrote, he had one, you know, I forget, it was he did a, like, a Jack London thing, even. Like, he scored movies every once in a while. But yeah, I think the guy's had a extremely successful career. Mm-hmm. People think maybe his acting and, you know, his one movie he directed, he's just kind of a, you know, no-namer. He just did a couple things. But no, I mean, he is very, very active in the community and film community, writing songs, doing everything. So yeah. I've always kind of looked up to him because he, you know, that's something that I would want to do in my career, even when I was little, is I wanted to, you know, do music, be an actor, direct, do all this kind of stuff, and he did it, you know. So he's kind of an inspiration for me. So I was always cool. very fond of David Hess.
Brian, what's your take on To All a Good Night? Did you is it the first time seeing it? Have you seen it before? And what were your thoughts?
I think it was another where I thought I had, but I hadn't. You know, I've been running across a lot of those lately with these genre releases. Excuse me. But, yeah, Brad's right. I mean, you know, you can tell that it was a bit of a struggle. You know, I mean, there's some I mean, I don't know if I got confused, but I mean, it feels like there's some Ed Woodisms in this, even like where, you know, a scene is supposed to be taking place at night and then it's clearly daytime, not even day for night, really, which is not a big deal. You know, I mean, like I'm much more forgiving of that kind of stuff, especially in a slasher. Yeah. I mean, I've said before on the show, and I'm kind of a slasher apologist, so I kind of like the genre. And I hadn't even thought about it, Brad, but you're totally right. As far as the context of this, like, this came out supposedly in January of 1980, and I mean, for example, Friday the 13th didn't even come out until May that summer, you know. So I mean, it's ahead of the curve in that respect, and
yeah,
thinking about it that way, it kind of gives me a different perspective on it.
It almost sets up cliches rather than
falls
into cliche things. I mean, he was making, you know, but I think when people say cliche, they think of the corniness and the silliness in the film. And I think that was just David Hess grew up on horror films. He loved horror films, so he just took stuff that he liked and put it in this. Yeah. I mean, and he didn't have a budget. He didn't have much of a story. The killers give it away early on in the movie. You know, the movie's full of, you know, I was actually very, very excited. This is one film that I was very, very excited to watch on Blu-ray, because from the media tape that came out years ago to digital stuff that was, you know, bootlegs online, it was so goddamn dark. Like, you can't make out anything in this movie. And I was actually really glad to watch the Blu-ray, because it brought light to everything, because, you know, you can actually make things out now. You can actually see the boobies before you had to be squinting. But, I mean, yeah, it's horribly lit. Oh, my God. Like they just – it didn't have anything for this movie. And the fact that he just pulled it off is impressive to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is a hard thing to do, especially when he prior to this, he worked on some horror films, so he's just probably learned from experience of just being in front of the camera, and when they said cut, he just, you know, looked at watched what people do, watched what Wes Craven did, and he, you know, tried to replicate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I this was me watching it for the first time, and that's probably going to be the hit or miss, or the you know, it could be hit or miss for someone like me who has seen a lot of horror movies, but some of these like early classics that were the first ones hasn't seen it, because the first thing I wrote down was this is basically Christmas Prom Night. But Prom Night, of course, came out after this, you know, with the, you know, the whole setup. The setup is very short in here, but it's the same exact setup, you know, that we get for, you know, a possible revenge story, you know? And like all the cliches, like everything's there, you know? And so for me, I was like, oh my gosh, it was kind of a slog, you know? I had a hard time getting through it because like you knew what was going to happen, you know? But in hindsight, now knowing that this was, came out before all those, that's pretty incredible, but it's almost to this film's detriment, yeah, that you know is coming out so late on finally a home video release. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it was in prior to this, it was very underseen because it's some that never had a DVD release. Yeah. Like I said, it just was had, you know, like not even other companies released it on VHS. It was media put it out, and then it got bought up by MGM years ago, and you know, it was just funny. And I know that Sean, you probably don't know this, but Brian, did you notice who was in this? He's a popular porn star.
I did not. I missed that.
Harry Reams is in the movie.
Harry Reams.
He's known as the guy in Deep Throat.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, he was in this movie. So.
Cool.
I just a little side note for me.
Yeah. Well, this is basic slasher setup with the plot. I mean, for some reason these girls, it's Christmas vacation at an all girls school, right? Are they supposed to be in high school?
I thought it was college.
Is it college?
Yeah, but I don't know.
Girls, though.
No, it's a...
I thought it was a sorority thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a sorority thing. Yeah, it's the... God, what is the name of the fucking school? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Something finishing school. Okay. Whatever.
Well, I mean, but so everyone's going home for Christmas, but these girls, for some reason, are staying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, same thing as in college and everything during Thanksgiving break, Christmas break. Some people go home to their families, others stay behind. And I think this is the people that stay behind because, you know, they have a Christmas party going on and they invite their boyfriends over and then they all start dying because they're having sex and sex is bad. Sex is good, but it's bad in movies.
But that's what's great about this movie, too, though, because you think about in hindsight, it kind of beat Friday the 13th to that, right? Because this came out before Friday the 13th.
Yeah. No, so that's what I'm saying.
It sets up it's, like all those cliches.
It's very funny.
It's ridiculous, you know, thinking about it now, you know, because I was like, oh, this is just like Friday the 13th, you know?
Yeah.
And turns out it came out before. It's pretty cool, kind of now, you know, something that I thought was just cliche ridden and kind of a slog. Now that I'm thinking about it, knowing the history, it's
people always say that like it's very cliche, and it's like a lot of horror films are cliche because I think it's a certain formula that people follow, and you don't actually have to be like trying to follow it. It just gets slumped into that because there's just so much you can do. You know, there's not a ton of shit you can do with just a slasher like this. You know, you want to introduce your teens. You want to see them, you know, some people be bad. You want to see some people be good. You want to have your survival girl, all that. And then it all dwindles down to you got to get to the kills because you only have a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an hour and 20 minutes usually. You know, you have to introduce your survivor. You have to introduce her friends. You know, you have to, because I mean, that's typically what it is. It's either high school kids or college kids. And you only have a limited time. You have to get to those kills first, or your film would fail. Because if you don't have kills, or, you know, a well made horror film like Halloween, like, you know, we discussed that it takes a while to get the kills in that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you only have a certain amount of time. So I think that's kind of why these films fall into that cliche place, is that we only have an hour and 20 minutes to get to our point. So let's do this, 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 and this. And that's kind of what all the films do.
Yeah.
And so they all become the same. The only thing that's different is the mask for the killer, the ways that people die, and the plot. The so-called plot twist at the end, because I mean that's basically what these films were, is like, let's think of creative ways to die. And that I always thought that was funny because they kind of did the same thing in Final Destination. I look at Final Destination movies as kind of like slashers as well, because, you know, let's think of creative ways to kill people. You know, we'll set up the movie, we have our survivor, we have our friends, and death is the slasher, and then we just start killing them off one by one until we get to the end. I don't know. It's very, like, that's just a cliche realm. I think that's kind of what all these films fall into.
Well, I don't think you can fault these movies.
That's why I like slashers, because I don't fault them for it. That's the story behind it. You know, yes, there are some that go out on a limb, you know, and try something new. They throw like a supernatural thing in the mix, or like a supernatural presence, a zombie, whatever the fuck they want to do. You know, it's just not a person killing people off. But then, like I said, there's just so much you can do in these movies. I don't fault them for that, and that's why I like slashers. And probably you don't, and Brian does. you know, like Brian said, he's very forgiving with this type of thing, and so am I. I mean, I go in watching kind of like, what are they going to do? How are they going to kill people? You know, I'm not going in for, you know, revolutionist cinema with a story or anything.
No. Yeah, I also like, I have a weird affection for the sort of amateurish acting that ends up happening in these sometimes, and this is an example of that. I don't, you know, I'm bad acting people, I'm sure it turns some people off, but there's something about acting that is not quite, you know, it's not quite where you'd like it to be. of a certain period, like late 70s, early 80s. I don't know, especially female acting. There's something about the ladies of that period that I find compelling, you know, and I just think, I don't know. If there's cute girls in it, I hate to be so reductive, but you know, I'm always kind of curious, like, what, you know, what do they look like? What are they, how do, you know, how do they act? And there's something charming about it to me. I can't explain it. Yeah.
No, I'm the same way. I mean, when I very, very first got into horror films when I was little, I wanted zombies and I wanted slashers. Those were my two favorites. And I kind of got off the zombie kick, but I've always been obsessed with slashers, even like the, you know, B-rated ones that are coming out today. As soon as I find out that there's a killer killing kids, you know, sorority kids or high school kids, I'm always down. Like, even stuff today. It's just, I just like that aspect. And I think you're right, Brian. There's just certain things. It's the girls, it's the dialogue. You know, it's not so much that you know you're going to get the same story. It's not that. There's just something that draws me to that little subgenre. Mm-hmm. And there's many, I can go on forever about what you know, what draws me in, but I don't know. It's just a fun little aspect to it. You know, I guess it's my also kind of obsession with real life, like serial killers. It's kind of fascinating in that way. Not that, you know, I worship motherfuckers or anything like that. They're terrible people, but there's, you know, there's just something about it that draws me to it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a sinister thing or whatever, but you know, I enjoy that aspect of the film.
What are you guys' without spoiling anything, I guess, what are you guys' favorite moments? One of my favorite moments, I don't really want to say, but it involves something other than a Santa Claus outfit, and that was an awesome holy shit moment, if you guys know what I'm talking about.
No.
Dang it.
My favorite, yeah. since you don't give
it involves anything. Something from the medieval times.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. No, that is good. That is good.
I probably just spoiled it, but whatever.
My favorite moment, and it's just so, so cliche, and this is part of the reason why I like these movies, is that when the killer goes up, it's like in the first 15 minutes, like pulls open the drawer, puts on the glove, grabs the knife, and then takes that red marker and crosses out all those names.
Oh, that is
just
awesome.
One with one big X, and then picks up the picture of the girl that died in the beginning, and then like it's this weird transition back and forth of the death and her picture, the death and her picture, and it's like, wow, you guys really thought about this one, didn't you? You know,
there's some weird transitions that they do, like,
but that's what I like about it. It makes me laugh. You know, it's just this setup. And I like that preparation in horror films for the killer. And and it reminds me of the moment in Student Bodies, whenever the beginning the killer is trying to find and it has like this whole display of weapons, and they're like looking through slowly, like, you know, they have like an axe, a machete, a gun, and he ends up picking up a paperclip. At the have you never seen Student Bodies? No one.
Yeah. No. I love Student Bodies.
I actually have not seen it.
But yeah, it's a spoof on slashers, and it takes all those little cliche things, and you know, obviously makes fun of them, which, you know, that's what parodies do. But you know, is one of the very wasn't the very first, but it's definitely up there of being one of the very more popular spoofs. What was the other one, Brian, that came out that was a very, very famous spoof? Not Draco? Famous spoof, but it was another. No, it wasn't. That was the that was the lawnmower thing, right?
Yeah. What's the
Yeah. No, it was one where like the school is like their mask. Like the I just know the scene where the girls are on the field. And they like have a tomato, they have like a piece of lettuce, like big styrofoam, like fruits and vegetables, and then the killer's like in the stands and throws a javelin at them, and it goes through all their bodies, but they look like
shish kebab.
What do you call that with all the shish kebab? Yeah.
It's not a scary movie.
What's the name of that movie?
It's not Pandemonium. Pandemonium, is it? No.
Pandemonium.
Prefontaine.
So familiar.
No, wait, that's a running. That's a track movie. Never mind.
Pandemonium is another one of those early, you know, slasher parodies.
I want to say that's it. And it, shit. Yeah,
that sounds. Sounds like it could
be. Yes, no, it is. It is Pandemonium because they had like a tomato.
Yeah,
and they have. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it is. And you know, it's just, and it's one of those films that takes just your normal silly little things, and there's a lot of like little subtle funny things in there because like, they actually have that one scene where that person's like a gymnast, and there's it's actually the God, what's his name? Judge Reinhold, he like
yes,
has that,
yes.
And you know, he puts like, he straps like dynamite to the springs, you know. It's just, that's a stupid spoof, but anyways,
it's a stupid movie. People should see it though.
It's easy to take those little cliches because they happen in every film. So I don't know. I like, that's another thing I enjoy. I enjoy parodies of these things because you know, we laugh during the seriousness in these movies, but we also laugh that people are making fun of them. I don't know. It's just an all around good time for this type of thing. You know, nice. Whether the movie's good or bad, it's all around fun. I mean, from really great slashers, from Friday the 13th, Black Christmas, stuff like that, to just corniness of not well-made movies at all, like To All a Good Night and The Mutilator and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the transfer on this one. There's not a whole lot of special features, but I do want to, I think there's a couple of interviews we can talk about. I thought the transfer looked okay. It was a bit, it wasn't like restored, you know, or anything. It was a bit soft, you know, but you can tell it was a product of its time. But I didn't have any issues. I mean, I'm glad they just kind of left it as it is and released it with this one.
Yeah, no, I thought it looked better. Like I said, I thought it looked a lot better than the DVD or VHS for a long, long, long time. I mean, you can actually see what's going on. Like, for example, like, most of the scenes, I'm being honest, like, you can't see shit. It's so, so dark. I thought the video was outstanding. I thought it was very, very well done. It was definitely the best that this film has ever looked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then again, I mean, like I said prior, is that this wasn't a well-made movie. So they worked their asses off on this release, because I thought everything looked very, very, very good. Audio was, of course, okay, but like I said, it is a poorly made movie in a way, not as a hit against Hess or the movie itself, but it's not well made. So to see a film look this good, it's an honor. I'm sure David Hess would be absolutely outstanding if he was still alive watching this. He would be so happy. Not outstanding, but I think that he would be very, very happy. So,
what about you, Brian?
Yeah, I thought it looked good. You know, it's one of those, and I think this is a trend I've noticed for me more and more with Blu-ray, is the trend to just go, yeah, this is about as good as this is going to look. You know, realistically, and I don't mean that as a sort of like, it's okay. I mean, like, considering the elements and the time it was filmed and everything like that, you know, I'm perfectly happy with it. You know, I think it's a pretty nice treatment. It's, again, we were talking about Code Red and Scorpion. I mean, these are movies that I just don't see too many other companies kind of giving a shit about. Yeah. So I really appreciate that they're taking the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of releases we can talk about where they could have been better, Ravenous, and a movie that we'll probably be talking about, you know, sometime soon, involving a Santa Claus. That Blu-ray was utter shit. Anyway,
you're so cryptic.
So there's a couple of interviews on here, three interviews actually, and pretty, you know, nothing crazy with any documentaries or anything. But there's an interview, like we already mentioned, with Jennifer Runyon, which is pretty good. She kind of goes through her whole career in a little bit, and, you know.
She's another thing I like about the movie, and that's partially because I used to have a huge crush on her from Ghostbusters. So.
Yeah.
But, of course, she's playing, like, this total, like, good girl, you know. It's kind of not the character that I would have wanted necessarily, but...
Sounds like you're loading a gun, Sean. What is that?
Sorry. I'm just grabbing something out of the drawer. Just grabbing the gun out of the drawer. Yeah.
No. I'm waiting just for the pow.
I'm sorry, Brian, before Bradley.
No.
Bradley. Rudely interrupted you. I was trying to be quiet.
No, it's all good. Yeah, no, so it was curious to see her in that interview, but that was another thing I meant to say about the movie itself is, you know, it's neat to see her in it as in an early prominent role.
Yeah. She has a lot of fond memories about herself. She was in there was some comedy, camping comedy that after this it's on Up the Creek. Yeah, it's on my DVD wish list for Amazon.
That's a fun flick. I hope that comes to Blu-ray.
I know. I've been waiting to pull the trigger, and I think... Did Scorpion put that out? I want to say it's...
There's an MOD from MGM, but...
Okay, that's probably what I'm thinking about then.
I think.
Okay, never mind. So yeah, it was fun, you know, seeing her kind of reminisce. I think now she said she's a teacher at a girls and boys club or whatever, and she does a radio show. So, Brad, any thoughts on Jennifer Runyon?
No, I mean, I've always enjoyed her. I think she's super, super cute. You know, everything that she's been in, I've pretty much liked everything from Ghostbusters to A Very Brady Christmas. You know, so I've always thought she was super cute. I just wish she did more instead of Carnosaur. Okay, so I said it right that time.
Speak for yourself, Carnosaur rules.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it was her last movie, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So then the next interview was with Catherine Harrington, who plays the house mother. And holy crazy woman look. Did you notice? Do you guys watch these interviews?
Yeah.
Something's up with her eyes.
Yeah, she had a little work done, I think, maybe.
And it's kind of taking its toll now that the old age is sagging.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I was so distracted by her crazy shifting eyes. One seems to be misshapen or a different... I don't know.
Wow. I felt bad for her.
I know, it's not like, yeah, you kind of feel bad for her. She's oozing confidence in the interview, but I just couldn't stop staring at her eye. Maybe she shouldn't have done so much eyeliner and mascara to accent the, you know, I don't know. Anyway, but it's fun listening to her talk about the movie. I didn't finish the interview because I fell asleep when I was trying to watch it. But did you guys finish the whole interview?
I think so.
I actually didn't watch the interview. So.
Yeah. It's a good interview. The last one with the producer-writer guy, I think, is my favorite because he's got a lot of production insight and stuff like that. That was the best one.
Alex Rebar, he was involved with Incredible Melting Man.
Cool. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that with J.R. Bookwalter. Anyway, geez, that's the sound of a car. That's just wow. All right, well, never mind.
You're plugging the show on the show.
Yeah, I am. Anyway, sorry, Brian. Back to his interview. You're saying
I don't remember specifics. I just remember, like Brad had said, you know, you get a sense of the difficulty of the production, and it gives some context for it. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was. I always kind of like to hear stories of the wild, wild west that was, you know, making horror movies around this time. And that's a cool. I do like that one.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Anyway, that's so funny.
All right, well, I think that wraps up our conversation on Too All Good Night. But would you guys recommend this to somebody? I would, you know, for me, I like collecting Christmas horror movies if the price is right. I think this is one that I wouldn't pay full price on. If you're new to it, if you're a fan of it, you know, this is great. But if you're like me and you're just, you know, kind of discovering it for the first time. Maybe, you know, you don't want to pay full price, but I would say it's worth adding to your Christmas horror collection.
Yeah, yeah, I think for any fan of slashers, this is a must. Any fans of Killer Santa Claus, I would say. But if you're pretentious and you don't like all types of horror films, then you're going to hate it.
This is true. No, I would agree, Brad. It's definitely one for the slasher fans out there. You should have it.
Yeah, if you like stuff like Final Exam and the Dorm to Drip Blood, that type of thing, cause that's kind of like the route this one goes. I would say, yeah. So,
all right, cool. Well, with that, I've been meaning to get into this, talking about some of our listeners who paid for our t-shirt. They bought, and when we did the Indiegogo campaign, we had a super deluxe option. And I've been waiting for those shirts shipped out to everyone before I started, going through these. So for the next couple of weeks here, I'm going to list, we had a handful of them. And the perk was, you know, we'll talk about, your blog or whatever, whatever you do on the podcast. So I'm going to talk about give a couple shout outs here to a couple listeners who bought our shirts. So thank you very much, guys. The first person is Dustin Bacon. He goes back and forth with us on Twitter quite a bit. He has a blog called uncleoflies.blogspot.com. He did a 31 Days of Schlock in October, and all of his reviews are up there. His Twitter is Fenderman_Inc. So follow him on Twitter, check out his blog. Next super deluxe person. I'm horrible doing this shit, so I apologize. Jason Burtis, he's a friend of the show, he comments quite a bit, just wore our t-shirt to, we went and saw Riff Tracks live. So Jason, thanks for your contribution.
That's awesome.
You can follow Jason, JBird1981, and that's JBURD1981. On Twitter. And finally, shut up, Brad. My buddy Joey Avalos, he is a musician. He writes music, does a lot of stuff in Nashville. He runs jmamusic.com. Really good guy, and he manages a band called Cloverton, and they have a Christmas album that's doing ridiculous numbers on iTunes right now. So check him out at jmamusic.com. And if you need music licensing, music, stuff like that, I believe he's a songwriter, so he has stuff available for commercials and shit. All right? And that's it. That's our super deluxe shout-outs. And we'll do a few more in the next couple weeks, and Brad will hopefully get better at these so I don't hear Brad snickering, you fucking bastard.
Well, hopefully, since you know you're going to do it, you're going to be more prepared.
I think so. I was just, that's why I was fumbling in my drawer. I was like, oh shit, I gotta get to these.
Now I see why you pulled out the gun.
Right. So I don't own a gun, Brad. Not yet, anyway. But if someone jacks the blow up Christmas decorations off my lawn, I'm buying a freaking gun and I'm gonna camp out.
Wow.
Take care of business. Anyway. All right.
I don't know if you're drinking or what.
That's, not yet. Not yet, but I probably will open up a bottle of scotch right as soon as we get done to drown my sorrows. And then I'll head to church. Just kidding.
So basically this show now is just a downward spiral of your life and what you're
pretty
doing.
Pretty much.
All right.
No, that's good.
Episode 40, I guess we did.
Do it for this week's show. We were hoping to have a Hookers and Blow for our 40th episode, but it's too early for Hookers and Blow. So we'll do something more special another time. Maybe for a 50th episode. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I have nothing to say. I have no idea where all this is coming from. I'm usually the one that derails the show. I don't even know. Like, the rails aren't even close right now for us.
All right.
I don't even know what you're doing.
I have no idea.
I'm actually sweating. Like, I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous, Brad. Don't be nervous. Just lay back, enjoy, and just let it happen, Brad. Just let it happen.
Oh, my God.
All right, that's gonna do it for this week's show. We're gonna quit while we're ahead. Right, we're ahead. Right, we're ahead.
It did it in about not, an hour we're ago. Not
flailing down in a burning mess. You can check out our show over at oneofus.net. I want to thank them for hosting our show. And you can check us out over at thescreamcast.com. All of our Twitter's available there, and you'll be able to find all of us personal Twitter accounts through our Twitter account, scream_cast. Music you hear is from Wolfman of Mars. Look for a new album coming your way very soon. I believe in February? That 2015 that will be released. And they're at wolfmenofmars.bandcamp.com. Caffeine provided by coffeeshopofhorror.com. So check them out.
I need more.
Good stuff. And let's see. Oh, nerdly.uk. Nerdly.co.uk has posted our show over there in the UK. So I want to thank them for posting our show every week. And I think that's it for the announcements. Do you guys have anything to say before we close?
Absolutely not.
I'm good.
Awesome. I don't know. Maybe my excitement is we've had 2 weeks of Brian Sauer on the show. Maybe, I'm a little excited. Don't want it to end. So I just want to keep on talking to keep Brian on the line because I will miss him. But we have a great couple of shows coming up next couple of weeks. Some more Christmas horror to talk about. Otherwise, all of you have a great week. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
I'm trying to get this done before the kids wake up. We've got that stupid elf on the shelf thing. And now they want to get up earlier than ever.
I don't know what that is.
All right, are we ready to do the... Unique New York. Unique New York. Are we ready to do this?
One horse open sleigh.
Hold on a second.
Can I just go?
Hold on.
I think Brian left already.
Did he leave already?
I'm hanging out. Probably.
I'm going to be editing the shit out of this.
Yeah. Have fun.
Shut up.
I have no idea what just happened.
His shit don't stink.
No, it does.